The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
From the number one sports site in the world.
Big names.
Bold interviews.
Bold interviews.
Beyond the X's and O's.
Welcome to the fastest 2 hours in radio.
On Yahoo Sports Radio.
And yahoosportsradio.com.
This is the Big E Sports Show.
With the one and only, the triple threat, the Big E.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell. The 6 foot former Sooner women's basketball player.
She can post, pin,
turn the volume up,
and produce with some of today and yesterday's biggest stars.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Get ready to go beyond the X's and O's
with today's star athletes, coaches, and sports figures.
This is the Big E Sports Show
right now.
Now from the Quicken Loans studios of Yahoo Sports Radio.
Are you ready?
Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze.
Here she is, the one and only, the Big E, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Yes, here we go. Once again, it is time for the fastest 2 hours in radio at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker-Campbell. And I tell you what, tonight we have got you covered because hour number one, we're going to focus our attention on the in-state Western Conference matchup with the Spurs and the Mavericks. And what a game on Wednesday night. The Dallas Mavericks even up the series with that 113-92 win on the road. Monte Ellis scoring 21 points. I thought overall it was a great team effort. Brilliant X's and O's by head coach Rick Carlisle. And the Dallas Mavericks, as a result, they snap a 10-game skid against the Spurs. They will be back in action Saturday afternoon at the American Airlines Center in Dallas, a 3:30 tip on TNT. It's such a pleasure to welcome in tonight Dan McCarney. He is the Spurs beat writer with the San Antonio Express News. Dan, we really appreciate you joining us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show.
Anytime.
Well, the series has now evened up between these two teams. What do you see since Wednesday night's game in terms of what is the biggest difference from game one to game two with the Spurs? Because Dallas, honestly, I mean, they really did dominate game two.
Yeah, I mean, you have to start and end with those 24 turnovers. I mean, you're not going to beat an expansion team doing that, let alone a really good basketball team. You know, it's easy to write Dallas off, and I've been guilty of this too, probably in my pregame or pre-series stuff. Okay, they're an eighth seed, but not all eighth seeds are created equal. I mean, they won 49 games. They've got a lot of good veterans. Dirk Nowitzki had a fantastic year this year, and they've got, you know, I don't think Rick Carlisle takes a backseat to anyone from an X's and O's standpoint. So, you know, even though the Spurs have really had no trouble with this team over the last couple years, they're probably pretty lucky that they're not even down 2-0, because let's not forget that they were losing game one by 10 points with about 8 minutes left. So could really be a lot more interesting compared to just really interesting right now. So their defense that the Mavericks have kind of pulled off, that really surprised me, because during the regular season that was definitely not a strength of theirs.
Well, in game two, I mean, it was the glaring stat, and you just brought it up, the Spurs with an unprecedented 24 turnovers, which resulted in 33 points for the Mavericks. I mean, they certainly capitalized on that. I have never seen a Spurs basketball team so really careless with the basketball. I mean, 15 turnovers in the first half. You ever seen something like this happen with the Spurs before?
I mean, over an 82-game season, you'll see, you know, you're going to have games like that. I think they had 24 against Golden State in December. They won that game. But, yeah, I mean, in turnovers, the theory with the Spurs is that they rely so much on ball movement and player movement. You know, they execute a lot of passes, and then maybe that makes them a little bit more prone to having turnovers, you know, we kind of forked that up to Pop earlier this season, and he kind of scoffed at, you know, basically good passers don't turn the ball over, I think is how he put it in his own unique way. But I think there's something to that. You know, when you're executing maybe, let's say, 15 or 20 passes in a possession compared to, you know, 5, 10, that's obviously going to kind of increase the risk rate. But I think it was probably about an even split last night between turnovers at the Mavericks force and then just basic sloppiness on the Spurs part. You know, talking at practice today, they were very complimentary of the Mavericks and what they've done. But Tony Parker in particular felt that we need to do a much better job of just, you know, not being sloppy and slowing down and not trying to make silly passes in a crowd, which is, you know, you saw a lot of that last night.
You were listening to The Voice, Spurs writer with the San Antonio Express News. That, of course, is Dan McCarney at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. And refresh my memory from Wednesday night. I mean, what did Coach Popovich, in terms of what did he say in pinpointing why there was, you know, double-digit turnovers and talking about 24?
Well, he never really gets too much into the specifics, you know, like this is exactly what, but basically what he said was he felt that they tried, kind of, you know, referring to what I just said in terms of he felt they played in the crowd too much and were trying to make, you know, really risky passes in dangerous spots instead of, you know, just taking what the defense is giving them. You know, the Spurs, above all else, they're built on teamwork, and they emphasize, you know, their phrase for it is good to great. We want to pass up, they want to pass up good shots to get great shots. And they've got a lot of really high IQ players, that are unselfish. And when it's going well, it's beautiful. You know, I think, Marcin Gortat from Washington compared to watching them play to listening to Mozart, and it really is, you know, the extra passes. But it's almost like, you know, an old record player. Maybe I'm going to date us here. You know, I still remember having a record player, and when that needle would skip, you know, it's like an ice pick to the back of the brain, and that kind of maybe is what happens with them sometimes. Certainly was the case last night, just maybe overpassing, getting a little too cute, and not exploiting individual matchups. You know, that's really not what the Spurs want to do. They want to play a team game, and the Mavericks are kind of putting them in a position where, Tony Parker, we're going to give you every outside shot you want. Tim Duncan, if you can beat us down on the block, you know, go ahead. And they're going to have to maybe start exploiting some of that, and that just kind of goes counter to the way that they want to play basketball. They want to help create shots for teammates. They want to drive inside, kick it out to three-point shooters. They want to play a team game, and the Mavericks are really doing a good job, you know, kind of not allowing them to do that.
Well, it was really stunning looking at the final box score in terms of Tony Parker only with 12 points, Timmy Duncan 11. I mean, what were the Mavericks doing defensively to keep these guys in check and not allow them to get on track?
I think a lot of it, you know, you have to look at the minutes. The game gets out of hand, and Pop is going to sit him at that point. But certainly it was kind of strange last night, I thought. I thought Parker started out really aggressively looking for his shot. I think he took four or five in the first 6 minutes. You know, they're basically daring him to beat him from, you know, Tony's improved a lot as an outside shooter. He's an above average mid-range shooter now in his NBA career. But certainly, it's like LeBron James. You will take that conceding kind of an 18-footer as opposed to letting him get to the rim and causing havoc that way. So they're kind of daring Parker to shoot. And I thought he started off really taking advantage of it, but it gets back to what I was saying. You know, having one guy dominate the offense really goes counter to what they do. So I guess Parker was saying Popovich pulled him aside today and said, hey, if you have to shoot 25 times, you're going to have to shoot 25 times. So I think it's a really clever strategy from the Mavericks. And what surprised me was that they kind of knew that coming in, and they still weren't able to capitalize on it with some of these, you know, Marion going under screens, Ellis guarding Leonard down. That was a big, big hole in their game plan. You know, they talked about how they were going to really go to that that matchup, Monte Ellis giving up 3, 4, 5 inches to Leonard in the post, and Kawhi just didn't have a very good game. Foul trouble contributed, of course, but he didn't score his first basket until the fourth quarter, so that was basically a big no-show. And they typically the Spurs can afford a couple guys not playing well, but in this series so far, in these two games, that hasn't been the case.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how Tony Parker and Tim Duncan respond on Saturday afternoon at the American Airlines Center. Hey, hang with us, Dan. We got to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back with much more. Dan McCarney, he is breaking it all down, the San Antonio Express News, and we're getting set to preview Game 3 between the San Antonio Spurs and the Dallas Mavericks on Saturday. We will be right back.
Listening to the Big E Sports Show
on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio. Here's Alyssa Walker Campbell.
The Big E.
Yes, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Alyssa Walker Campbell. Right now, we want to direct you to our Twitter, and that is at E Radio Sports, and also our radio website, eradiosports.com. We are having a wonderful conversation with Dan McCarney with the San Antonio Express News. He is the Spurs writer. We're recapping Game 1, Game 2, getting you set and ready for Game 3 on Saturday with a 3:30 tip. Of course, that will be nationally televised on TNT. Dan, tell of our listeners tonight across the country where they can go and follow you on Twitter too.
Yeah, I'm at Dan McCarney, McCarneySaen. Dan McCarney, Saen.
Well, before we went to break, we were talking about just, I guess, that stifling defense from the Dallas Mavericks, how they really minimized Parker and Duncan from their ability to go off. We know what they're capable of doing. But what about defensively, how the Mavericks were able to keep Kawhi Leonard? They got him into early foul trouble, but he was never able to get into rhythm. And he has certainly been one of the key players in the Spurs' success all season long.
Yeah, I mean, if you put a gun to my head over the last couple months, I might pick him as their MVP. You know, they don't really have a style where it's really going to focus on one guy, but they don't have anybody that can really do all the things. He's kind of like a, you know, playing style different, but he's a lot like a Sean Marion for Dallas in that he just does a lot of things well. You know, he's a solid outside shooter. He's a very good rebounder for his position. He's an excellent defensive player. And that, to me, was almost the bigger measure in Game 2 than what he didn't do on offense. Points are going to come and go in that offense, but the lack of activity on the defensive end, you know, steals and blocks aren't always a good way to measure defense. But in his case, he has the ability to make really game-changing energy plays, a big block shot or an open court steal and taking it the length of the court for a dunk. He's usually good for a couple of those a night, and he really struggled with Monte Ellis. I mean, going back and looking at some of the highlights, he just got beat completely flat-footed by Ellis going to the rim, and you don't see that very very often with Kawhi. So they kind of attributed to the foul trouble. I think that certainly is probably what happened, but in my mind, that's not a particularly good excuse. You know, guys get in foul trouble, and you have to know how to deal with that. So he was just out of sorts all game, and they can't afford that.
Well, it was certainly evident with Leonard, him unable to get on track, how much that did affect the Spurs. What about Danny Green? I mean, this is a guy, we've seen him shoot the long ball. I mean, he only had, 6 points in Game 2?
Yeah, I think it's attributable to what, you know, Dirk had a great comment after Game 2 where basically their whole focal point is to kind of limit the three-point line. Spurs were 3-for-17 in Game 1, mission accomplished. Game 2, not so much, 10-of-20. Popovich kind of bristled when that was brought up about limiting the three-point line at practice. After that, just, hey, we shot 10-for-20. That's a good performance. And Carlisle said also, you know, that's usually a winning number for them. But they're doing a really good job of just gluing themselves to Green, Patty Mills, Marco Bellinelli, some of those peripheral guys that really feed off that team play that they get. And Danny in particular, you know, Danny's a very, very limited offensive player. If you kind of keep a man on him, he's not going to be able to create for himself off the dribble. You know, in fact, that's kind of probably what you want as a defense, to see him trying to attack the rim. You know, that's just not really his style. So the Mavericks have just done a really good job limiting those, you know, basically what Dirk said, you know, during the regular season, we'd make a mistake in transition, boom, three ball. We'd blow a defensive rotation, boom, three ball. And you're not necessarily seeing a lot of that, although the Spurs did improve. And Danny Green is usually the kind of player that's the recipient of that type of stuff.
Dan, weigh in on the bench production, because that's been such a big part of what the Spurs have been able to accomplish all season long. I mean, Manu Ginobili, he was fantastic, 5 of 6. You know, had 27 points from three-point range, 5 of 6. But they've got to have more contributions a little bit further down the bench, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, that's been their strength this year. They've got, you know, not just looking at scoring, which they led the NBA off the bench. With that, certainly that skewed a little bit because they play their starters so few minutes. But also in just total production, you know, there's kind of a simple production rate. You know, you add up all your rebounds, assists, you know, that kind of stuff, subtract missed shots, turnovers, whatever. It's a very kind of basic formula, but they were number one in that kind of measure by almost double the number two team, which is Dallas. So it's been a massive strength of theirs this year. You know, Bellinelli, Ginobili, Mills, Diaw. I mean, that wouldn't be a bad starting lineup for an expansion team. And they just haven't been getting the production from, you know, Manu's had two great games, although last night 6 turnovers was a real killer. Manu showed up in both of these games, but the rest of the bench has been really inconsistent. Frankly, I thought that was a huge edge, as good as Dallas's bench is for the Spurs coming in. And, you know, you'd have to say that's been an advantage so far for them. So that's a big reason why the series is split going back to Dallas.
Okay, Dan McCarney has been with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, hour number one. And, of course, he's with the San Antonio Express News. And my final question for you, of course, big news coming out of San Antonio this week with Greg Popovich being named the NBA Coach of the Year. I know you have a lot of admiration for him. We've heard head coach from the Dallas Mavericks talk a lot about that, Rick Carlisle, just how much he respects him as a coach. Just weigh in on what he has meant to this organization.
Oh, I mean, every bit of credit you give Tim Duncan as a teammate, as a leader, as just being, you know, the pillar of this franchise for 17 years, exactly like Dirk has been for the Mavericks. I mean, that's, they've had that with Popovich. I mean, it's almost unthinkable that a franchise player and a head coach would have been together for almost 20 years in such a volatile industry is professional sports. I mean, it's almost unheard of. Certainly in Utah, you had Stockton, Malone, and Sloan. But other than that, I mean, I can't think of anything off the top of my head that we can compare. So it's just that stability and just the experience and the intelligence. He brings everything to the table. But I will say this, you know, Pop kind of thought some of Rick's comments, or he's just kind of being a wise ass with specifically what he said. But when Rick compliments Popovich, I don't personally get any sense that he's being anything less than 100% sincere. But, you know, Rick Carlisle takes a backseat to nobody. I mean, you look at what he did in 2011.
Absolutely.
Kind of milking what on paper looked to be kind of a weird roster. You know, granted, Dirk Nowitzki's at the peak of his powers, but getting a championship out of that team was a pretty magnificent achievement. So Rick doesn't take a back seat to anybody from an X's and O's standpoint. And you see what he's been able to do to flummox the Spurs in these two games. Mm-hmm. So that's a great, great matchup. And, you know, I'm guilty of underrating that coming in myself. So I consider myself duly chastened. And it'll be really interesting to see what these two kind of giants of coaching come up with for game 3.
Absolutely. We're looking forward to game 3. Dan McCarney's been with us from the San Antonio Express News. And of course, Dan was just talking about head coach Rick Carlisle. We're going to go right now to that audio and post game from game 2 in San Antonio with the Dallas Mavericks winning 113-92. Thanks again, Dan.
It's a monumental task, but we're in this thing to win. You know, we're not in it just to get a split and feel happy. We can't do that. I mean, we cannot let up. And going back home, you know, this is where we've got to avoid any kind of let up going back to our building.
From the number one sports site in the world.
Big names. Bold interviews. Beyond the X's and O's.
Welcome to the fastest 2 hours in radio
on Yahoo Sports.
Yes, we are back at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell, and we have been breaking down all the action from the NBA playoffs, previewing this weekend's game. But right now, we are going to head into the strike zone. We're going to shift gears and focus our attention on the Detroit Tigers, who have won 3 straight AL Central crowns. entering into the 2014 season and look to be the favorites to come away with the division title again. And that's where our next conversation will take us. It is such a pleasure to welcome in this evening Mike Eisenberg, who is the coordinating producer with Fox Sports Detroit. He's going to help us go behind the scenes of the Detroit Tigers. Also, he's going to share about a new book that he co-authored with Mario Impemba, the television voice for the Detroit Tigers. And, of course, the title of the book is If These Walls Could Talk, Detroit Tigers, Stories from the Detroit Tigers Dugout, Locker Room, and the Press Box. Good evening, Mike. It's great to have you with us on this Friday night.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, another season of very big expectations for the Tigers as we are quickly wrapping up, hard to believe, the month of April. Just give us a sense of how things are playing out so far, and we'd love to hear some objective analysis.
Well, the Tigers made a big shift this offseason by trading Prince Fielder, and they acquired Ian Kinsler from the Texas Rangers. And the thinking was that this was a team that was built around power with Miguel Cabrera, of course, Victor Martinez, Prince Fielder, but they couldn't manufacture runs. So instead of waiting for the three-run homer, they decided to play a little bit more of a National League style of baseball. Brad Ausmus is the new manager. He has a National League background. So right now they're sitting at 10-8. They've gotten off to an okay start. The American League is really, the parity has really struck the American League. I mean, you know, the best team is Texas, and you know, except for Houston, Seattle, everybody is kind of right around that 500 level. I think this team is still sort of figuring out its identity and some new pieces and trying to incorporate the new style of ball that they're playing.
How much do you think the Detroit Tigers, how much do they miss Prince Fielder, since you just mentioned him right off the top?
Well, he's gone off to a terrible start in Texas, which a lot of people were surprised about. But the thing with Prince is that he had signed that 9-year contract a couple of years ago, came here, and his dad obviously played here. He grew up here, and the expectations were really high. Last year, I think everybody soured on him a little bit. He had a difficult personal season, and his stats reflected it. And in the playoffs, he couldn't buy a hit. So people were frustrated, and I think that people were happy to be able to get out of that contract because the Tigers paid about $30 million to the Rangers, and they had to eat the rest of his contract, which was over $20 million a year.
We were talking about the Detroit Tigers this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Mike Eisenberg, the coordinating producer with Fox Sports Detroit, is joining us. We're going to talk about his new book that is out here momentarily. But so much of the Tigers' success, really, as you look over the past 3 years and what they've been able to accomplish, has been predicated on their power, their pitching. What is your belief in terms of what they're going to be able to do in terms of how deep they can go into the postseason with the pitching that they have?
Well, that's going to be a great question, because last year and in the previous year, it was the big four: Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer, Anibal Sanchez, and Doug Fister. And they traded Fister in the offseason partly because they wanted to shed some salary, so they ended up signing Miguel Cabrera to an extension, and so they could try to sign Max Scherzer, which they haven't been able to do. So right now the big four is the big three, and Justin has pitched well this year. He was inconsistent last year for him, but it was a year that most pitchers would kill for. Max was 21-4 last year, so obviously tremendous year for him. He's picked up right where he's left off. He's already lost a game, so that was a big deal, but he's pitched very well. And Anibal Sanchez, who's really the unsung hero, won the ERA title last year. He's pitched very well as well. The two questions in the starting rotation: Rick Porcello, Drew Smyly. Drew Smyly pitched on Wednesday night and pitched okay. He's been rained out a couple of times as the fifth starter, so he's only made two starts. Rick Porcello has shown some signs that maybe he's starting to get it. He's still, I think, 25 years old. So the pitching is certainly going to be the key. And when you're talking about a 1-2-3 man rotation in the playoffs, you're not going to beat the guy who won the Cy Young this year, the guy who won the Cy Young in the MVP 2 years before that, and the guy who led the American League in ERA last year.
I want to give you a quick question. Talking about Justin Verlander, he had that core muscle surgery in the offseason. How is his health-wise? I mean, is he doing okay in terms of that, in the recovery?
It's really been stunning, because I was at the first couple of days of spring training, and he was a little bit behind. He had the surgery in January. Miguel Cabrera had
Correct.
The same surgery in December.
Mm-hmm.
And for both those guys, obviously, you're swinging a bat. Core is really important. Your pitching core is really important. And he looked pretty good in spring training when I saw him. He missed basically one start of spring training and then caught up to everyone else. He pitched on opening day. He pitched well. his velocity is down a little bit, but he's also, you know, he's another year older, and there's only so many bullets that every pitcher has in his arm. But he's looked like Justin Verlander, and that's the best news that they could get.
We're going one-on-one with Mike Eisenberg with Fox Sports Detroit, the coordinating producer. We're going to be talking about the new book that is out, If These Walls Could Talk, Detroit Tigers. Check that out online. And we are so glad you're with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Now, one of the questions we got to talk about is filling the shortstop position. Jose Iglesias, you know, out with what, stress fractures in both of his legs. Who has really stepped in and been that replacement and filled that void?
Well, that's sort of the billion-dollar question right now in Detroit. The plan was the Tigers made two trades just on the eve of the season. One was they traded Steve Lombardozzi, who they had acquired in the Doug Fister trade. They traded him to Baltimore for Alex Gonzalez, who was a 37-year-old veteran. Then they traded Jose Alvarez, a minor league pitcher, to Anaheim in exchange for Andrew Romine, who was sort of a floating shortstop between the majors and Triple A last year. Gonzalez just got released last week on Sunday, and he, you know, he's 37 years old. He used to be a great defensive player. He doesn't have that range anymore, and his hitting was not great. Romine is more of a good fielder, not a great hitter. They recently called up Denny Wirth, who has been up off and on the last few years. He's really viewed as a short-term replacement. They have a couple of guys in the minor leagues that still need a little bit more seasoning. Some of the people here think that there's going to be a trade or free agent Stephen Drew would sign after the June draft where the Tigers wouldn't have to give up a first-round pick. Because one thing they learned with Iglesias, you don't necessarily have to have hitting, but if you have great defense, that's okay. If you have great hitting, but you have to have something great at shortstop. It's too critical a position.
I'm so glad you bring up Stephen Drew, because my producer, Andy Pondillo, and I were talking about that prior to our interview, and potentially, you know, they might be looking to sign him midseason. If he was hypothetically to come on board, what kind of impact do you think that Stephen could make, Mike?
Well, the first thing is I don't think that they're going to sign him, because Dave Dombrowski has said that he believes that if they wait till after the draft to sign Stephen Drew, you would need to sign him to a multi-year deal. Iglesias is expected to be back either at the end of this year or next year, so you don't want to tie yourself up. Stephen Drew played well in Boston last year. He's a dependable shortstop. He's not a Gold Glove defender, but he gets what's there. And even despite his awful struggles in the playoffs last year, he is a relatively solid hitter. He's what I would call a slightly above-average shortstop. And on this team, that would be great. I mean, if you can just put someone in at shortstop, I don't think that Brad Ausmus wants to platoon such an important position. I think he wants to put a guy there and don't worry about it. With Iglesias, you know, maybe he's not a great hitter, even though he hit well last year, but defensively, he's the best defensive shortstop that just about anybody has seen, and it was nice to be able to just drop him in at short and don't worry about it.
Well, I was going to say, you look at Iglesias' numbers from last year, how much will the Tigers miss his offensive production? And you're saying that he will come back?
Well, there's a possibility he might come back later in the year.
Okay.
But even when he was with the Red Sox, the reason that the Red Sox traded him was that they never thought he would be a good enough hitter. Last year he hit really well, but I don't know if that was a smaller sample size type deal. I think if he ends up hitting in his career 250, he'll have a job for 10, 15 years, because even Omar Vizquel, our first base coach, you know, probable future Hall of Famer, said this kid is unbelievable. I've never seen anything like that in the field. So really defensively, that's where the Tigers also tried to shore up by getting Ian Kinsler, Rajay Davis playing left field, because, you know, they have enough offense, they felt, and they certainly have enough pitching. The defense was really a problem last year. Miguel Cabrera playing third base did a good job for a guy who's not really a third baseman. At first base, he's much better defensively, and I know that Brad feels much better having him at first base.
We are focusing our attention right now on the Detroit Tigers, the AL Central. We're going to step aside for a quick commercial break. We will be rejoined with Mike Eisenberg from Fox Sports Detroit, the coordinating producer, and we're going to get into this fascinating, compelling book, If These Walls Could Talk, Detroit Tigers, Stories from the Detroit Tigers. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Big E Sports Show
on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Once again, the host of the fastest 2 hours in radio, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Yes, we are back at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Elissa Walker-Campbell. We love hearing from you, and we love to connect with you. And do that at Twitter, at eRadioSports. You can also check out some of our work at our radio website. That is eRadioSports.com. Having a wonderful conversation before we went to break with Mike Eisenberg. He is Fox Sports Detroit's coordinating producer, covers very, very closely the Detroit Tigers, and has a new book out that he has co-authored with Mario Mpemba, the television voice. The title of the book is If These Walls Could Talk, Detroit Tigers. And so, Michael, before we went to commercial break, we were kind of getting the pulse on how the Tigers are doing, how the season's unfolding in the month of April. Talk to us about, as far as Dave Dombrowski, his leadership and what he has been able to do with the team.
One thing about Dave, and yesterday I had a conversation with Willie Horton, Tiger legend, and we were talking about Dave, and he says, Dave surrounds himself with people that challenge him. He's not a yes man. He doesn't want people that are just going to say yes. And if you look at some of the trades, and all general managers make trades that don't work out. But if you look at the trades that he's made, to be able to acquire Miguel Cabrera, mm-hmm. and Dontrell Willis was in the deal as well, for two minor league prospects who have had middling major league careers in Cameron Maven and Andrew Miller, you just got the best hitter in baseball for two guys that had played less than 50 games in the majors. That's pretty good. And what I always admire about Dave is he knows what he needs, and he gets it. A couple of years ago, they needed a second baseman and a pitcher, so he was able to use a number one and a number two draft pick they had, traded it to Florida, and in exchange they got Anibal Sanchez, who led the league in ERA, and Omar Infante, who played a great second base for the Tigers. So one of the questions I think he's going to face this year is the shortstop situation that we had touched on at the trade deadline. What kind of moves will they make? And the thing about Dave is, you know that if there's a glaring need, he's going to make a move. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't work, well, he went for it. And that's what I think every team wants in leadership.
Well, the Tigers general manager, Dave Dombrowski, I mean, is he the kind of guy that can position Detroit to really get a legitimate shot at winning the World Series?
Absolutely. I mean, he's done what he's done since he's been here. And he took over the team right around when they had 119 losses in 2003. And he started to build the team up slowly but surely. He has a great relationship with Scott Boras, who is Stephen Drew's agent, of course. But he's got an owner, Mike Ilitch, who has shown a willingness to spend. And Dave has won with small markets. He's won with big markets. And this is the best period of Tigers history they've ever had, 3 years in a row winning the division, getting to a World Series. Since 06, they've been in two World Series, four playoffs. So he is the guy, and this team is really built for now, especially with Max Scherzer in the last year of his contract. So Dave and Mr. Ilitch will put the chips to the center of the table, and they're going to go for it.
Mike Eisenberg with Fox Sports Detroit is joining us this weekend at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And I always love going behind the scenes in terms of management, kind of getting the pulse on them. But tell us about the impact that Brad Ausmus, the manager, is having. I mean, obviously, his credentials are so impressive. 22 years Major League Baseball experience, played catcher 18 years total. But just the assessment, Michael, of the job that he has done so far.
And this is not an easy job. A lot of times when a manager takes over a team, it's because the previous manager didn't get it done, the team's not good, and there's no expectations. Brad Ausmus, in his first managerial job, is walking into a spot where they expect to win the World Series. And Dave Dombrowski had never met Brad except maybe in passing. And they sat down, and he was just blown away. People like Tony La Russa called him and said, you should hire this guy. Brad he's a real smart guy. He went to Dartmouth. Was drafted by the Yankees, despite the fact he was a huge Red Sox fan. And as you said, played a long time in the majors and was always seen as a future manager. Very even keel, very dry sense of humor, doesn't seem to let things bother him. I mean, his first home game here, two innings in, he had an official video review that he won. He's very even keel. When you watch him during the game, you can't tell whether they're up 18 to nothing or they're down 18 to nothing. And I think that transfers to the players, knowing that you have a very calm leader. Jim Leland was a great manager for this team, probably going to the Hall of Fame. Jim was a more demonstrative guy and, you know, would get fired up and things like that. And Brad so far has been really even keel, and I think it's helping the team a great deal.
You know, Mike, you bring up a number of great points, and I think back to one of my earlier conversations. Tim Kirchen was on our show at the start of spring training, and he had just talked about how Brad is just, you know, the players relate to him. He gets on their level, and that obviously is going to be able to transfer over in their play.
Well, I'm friendly with Tim, and one of the things that Tim had said to me a couple of years ago was that with Jim Leland, he had never seen a team that echoes the manager like the Tigers did with Jim Leland. So it's really a tough spot for Brad to come in. But, I mean, Brad was playing 3 years ago. So he's played against some of these guys.
Wow, that is hard to believe, yeah.
And they definitely relate to him because he doesn't come in saying, hey, I'm this Hall of Fame manager. He's, okay, this is my first job here.
Uh-huh.
I have a plan. I know what we're going to do. And, you know, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. So when the team goes on a three-game losing streak, Brad Ausmus is not going to be ranting through the hallway saying, oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? These guys stink.
Uh-huh.
They know that he has their back. And that goes a long way.
We're having a great conversation talking about the Detroit Tigers with Michael Eisenberg from Fox Sports Detroit, the coordinating producer. And we're going to transition right now. We're going to talk about and highlight the new book that he has released, If These Walls Could Talk, Detroit Tigers. Of course, he teamed up with Mario Mpemba, the longtime television voice. And so tell us a little bit about the book. I mean, there's so many great stories. It was a bit overwhelming to figure out and pinpoint where are we going to start our conversation, Mike? Okay.
Well, the thing, you know, what got us going on this was that Mario and I have been friends for since I've been here in 06.
Sure.
And when we sit at playoff games and we would get up to go to the bathroom or get a drink, it would take 25 minutes because everybody wanted to talk to him.
Uh-huh.
And when you're around a professional team, the stories are incredible. And I'm not around the team like Mario is, but I can tell stories to my friends and say, hey, yesterday I was talking to Willie Horton for an hour.
Yeah.
And they think that's really cool. And I said, Mario, you travel with these guys. You're with them every single day. When you tell stories, I'm taken aback. People that read the book, you have great, great stories that people would have no idea of, and they'll be glued to it. And I hope that really came through in the book because he's been around for 20 years. He worked with the Angels before this, and I mean, he's come across a lot of interesting scenarios.
Of course, the title of the book, if you want to look that up online right now, if you're listening to our conversation, If These Walls Could Talk, Detroit Tigers, Stories from the Detroit Tigers, Dugout, Locker Room, and Press Box. Mike, you're talking about that Mario, you know, he has covered in baseball for over 20 years, been in the broadcasting world, and he's seen it all. He's seen so many of the greats, Roger Clemens, Greg Maddux, Pedro Martinez, the Randy Johnson story. I love the story in there about that. What was his favorite? I mean, is there one particular story that perhaps you didn't know about?
There was one that he talks about, that we talk about early in the book, where he was in the minor leagues. And, you know, when you're in the minor leagues, there's a reason they call it the minor leagues. It's, you're not in the big time.
That's right.
And he was in the booth, and his radio, his microphone, it wasn't a headset, it was a stick mic. And he didn't have a way of supporting it. Like, there was no way that he didn't want to hold it the whole game, and there wasn't a mic holder.
Uh-huh.
So he was able to go into the bathroom, take a roll of toilet paper, put the microphone through the toilet paper hole, and that was his mic stand for the game. And when he told me that, he had emailed me the story, and I called him up. I thought he was kidding. And that's minor league baseball in a nutshell right there.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay, so also I thought it was interesting, too. I mean, Mario really was very transparent in talking about, you know, so many times, you know, people ask him throughout his journey as far as they want to know about the players, Justin Verlander or Miguel Cabrera, but those are guys that get all the headlines. But really, you know, what is it like being behind the scenes in television and radio? I mean, it really does take a village to have a successful broadcast. I mean, that really spoke to me, obviously, being in this business.
Well, it's like building a team. I mean, you don't have a team with 25 guys that are Miguel Cabrera. And on our broadcast team, there's not 25 Mario Mpembas. We have guys that do the audio. We have guys that roll back the video. We have a person that operates the score bug. And individually, all those jobs may seem a little bit trivial. We have a person that hands him cards, a stage manager that hands him cards and says, hey, our player of the game today, and there's a replay history. With all those little roles make a big difference. And it's one of the things I tell my son all the time is small details make a big difference. And our broadcast team, we're really proud of our coverage. We've won a bunch of Emmy Awards for our coverage. The Tigers are the top-rated team the last 2 years in all of baseball. And without all of these people operating at peak efficiency, we're not accomplishing that.
Of course, the title of the book is If These Walls Could Talk, Detroit Tigers. Also, give us a quick hit, Michael, on he shared in there as far as which parks are the toughest on the visiting team. Can you kind of go through that quickly?
Well, one thing he said was you know, and I'm from Boston, so when he talked about Fenway Park, it hit home. But Fenway Park is over 100 years old.
Yes.
And, I mean, when you're walking onto the field, you sometimes can hit your head on the roof of the dugout. And it's an antiquated park. And, you know, he talks a lot about different experiences in some of the places. You know, Fenway Park, the world champion Red Sox, you wouldn't think that the park was antiquated. Well, guess what? It is. So some of the parks that you wouldn't expect to be difficult or old really are. And it's kind of like the behind-the-scenes version of what it's like to be a broadcaster.
Mike Eisenberg has been with us at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We want to encourage you to go out and get a copy of the book, If These Walls Could Talk.